I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about redistricting. A special interim study committee has looked at ways to redraw Indiana's maps. We'll talk today about what the committee has done and found, and what the state should do. My guests are Tom Sugar of the nonprofit Leader Leave, Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana, and Republican strategist Marcus Barlow. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about redistricting and its somewhat more shady cousin, gerrymandering. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are three veterans of the program. They are Tom Sugar of Leader Leave and formerly of Senator Evan Bayh's office, Julia Vaughn of Common Cause, and Republican strategist Marcus Barlow. Welcome back to all of you.
Thank you.
It's good to be here.
It's good to have you all here. So first, we probably ought to start by talking about, you know, I think with issues like this, it's a mistake to assume that everyone understands what we're talking about because we live in this world. So, Julia, I'm going to start with you. Let's talk about what redistricting or districting is and why it matters as much as it does.
Right. Well, we do it every 10 years after the federal census, and the explicit purpose is to equal out the number of people in each political district, in congressional districts and in state legislative districts. It's important because the way that's done, whether it's done fairly or unfairly, is going to impact the elections in our state for the next 10 years. And we've had a history, both parties in our state has used it for partisan political advantage instead of to serve the interests of the voters. So we've got gerrymandering, and we think that that's just a way that builds an unfair and unrepresentative democracy in our state. And we're happy that finally, after years of gerrymandering by both political parties, there are some important folks in the State House who have stood up and said it's time to change the way we do things here in Indiana.
Hence the committee, right?
Right.
So could you talk a bit about what the committee's charge was? And I know Tom served on it as well.
He did. It was an 18-month process put into place by a piece of legislation supported by both Republicans and Democrats in the state legislature. And it called for them to look at those states that have alternatives to legislative-controlled redistricting. There are only a handful out there, about six or seven now. And to look at, would those types of processes be appropriate for Indiana? So they've come up with a draft recommendation. It's an interesting hybrid of some examples from other states, but it's a step in the right direction. So we know there will be legislation in the 2017 General Assembly to reform redistricting. The draft recommendation is a good place to start, but we'll be working to make it better.
Tom, what are the recommendations that came out of that committee process?
I'll start with what I think is the most important one. Mm-hmm. Because, John, it sometimes doesn't matter as much who draws the districts as the rules they must follow when drawing them. And the most significant outcome of this draft legislation, the recommendation of the committee, is to remove from the process political data. Mm-hmm. You can no longer check to see how voters have voted in a particular area, their partisan breakdown, their voter registration, et cetera. The most important data necessary to slice and dice districts to give one party or the other an advantage. And so that's critical. Now, the political data can be used at the end of the process to verify that there haven't been violations of the Voting Rights Act, and that's appropriate. So I think if the current draft became law, gerrymandering, in a sense, would be illegal in Indiana because political data could no longer be used. The districts would be drawn exclusively on population, compactness, contiguity of district lines and the like, no longer splitting cities and towns and counties unnecessarily just for political gain. There are other elements of legislation I think are important as well, and chief among those would be the creation of a commission outside of the legislature. I will say this, John, the current draft doesn't go as far as I would have liked to have completely removed the legislature from the process. They still have their hands in it by proxy, but it still removes the process from just the back room that is currently taking place, controlled by the majority parties. And I want to be absolutely clear about this. Democrats have done this too. Mm-hmm. Republicans have done this too. Whenever they've gained the advantage in a decennial year, they rig the system for themselves. So shame on both parties. I would applaud the work of both parties in the commission or in the study committee's case because we came up with a plan that really could make a difference.
Yeah, I recall, so that we make it clear that this is a nonpartisan issue or concern. I remember talking with former U.S. Senator Birch Bayh once, who was early in his career Speaker of the Indiana House of Representatives. He was talking about the circumstances in which Indiana's first right-to-work law got repealed. Mm-hmm. And he said it was because in the House, the Democrats had something like a 91-9 majority, some really outlandish figure. And there's no way in this state you get to a number like that without some really creative map drawing.
Absolutely.
So, Marcus, how realistic is it, though, that we're going to be able to remove political data from the process? I mean, saying that you can't use it and then somehow keeping it from entering in or bleeding in around the sides is going to be pretty tough to contain, I would think.
So you're asking me how realistic is it that we're going to remove politics from politics?
That's what
you're asking me.
I was trying to do it a little more artfully than that. But
right. Yeah. I think that's a very good question. And, just from where I sit, and I haven't spent a lot of time talking to legislators about how they feel about this issue on either side. I haven't talked to Republican legislators either. But it does just seem to me as a student of political theory, political science, that this is a difficult case to make to legislators. And I know that the commission's findings aren't that the legislature should be pulled out of the process altogether. But, the commission did have some recommendations to have a lot of unelected people involved in the process. And I think that that's a hard case to make. And I think that's, for me, it'd be hard to convince me that, to give all of this, which, I mean, I think the reason why we're talking about this is that redistricting, just as Julia said, is a very powerful thing. So I don't know if I necessarily want to give that power to unelected people.
But the key question here is, whose districts are they?
Yeah.
Are they the politicians' districts or are they the people's districts? These are not the districts of the politicians. They are honored to serve us in territory that they unfortunately have designed for themselves for their own benefit. That can change. Yes, it's true, Marcus. Politicians will have to give up their greatest perk of all, the ability to literally design their own destinies. But it's happening around the country, and it can happen here if we have the political will and if the people speak up and demand the change.
And to your point about the people, though, politicians are accountable. Politicians are accountable to voters. And you can say that that's not fair, and you can say that, well, they're accountable to voters in districts that they drew. I'll admit that, but yet they are still accountable, whereas unelected commission members are accountable to no one.
Well, I want to step in and sort of reframe this question. I'm going to throw it to Julia, though. They are accountable to the people, but one of the effects of gerrymandering is it – in many ways warps the people's voice, right?
I mean, exactly.
Could we speak in numeric terms about how it's done that here in Indiana, about what the overall vote has been and what the representation is?
Well, exactly. A study by the University of Chicago Law Review in 2014 found the Indiana State House legislative districts to be the fifth most gerrymandered in the country. And they did that by looking at the vote and then looking at the percentage of seats that were divvied up after the election. In 2012, Republican candidates won about 1,340,000 votes compared to Democrats winning just under 1,999,000. If then the districts were allocated fairly along those lines, that would have amounted to a 57% Republican majority in the House. Instead, with the districts that were in place, that was the 69% majority, which has since climbed to 70%. And the majority of legislators in those districts are elected out of safe districts, and so they really aren't accountable. As long as they keep the party chairman happy, they are pretty much guaranteed re-election. The only time they're going to be challenged is in the primary, when a tiny percentage of registered voters actually cast a ballot. So in terms of accountability, gerrymandered districts undermine accountability every day. And so we fully expect that whatever kind of redistricting commission we end up with in 2021 here in Indiana, the legislature will no doubt have some sort of role in appointing them. So we don't have any accountability in the vast majority of state legislative districts to date because they've been gerrymandered. So I don't see any type of less accountability should we put a redistricting commission in place.
But we are talking about redistricting here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Yes, Marcus, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, I think that also, though, however, just looking at those numbers and trying to extrapolate percentages and what should happen in a state legislature actually discounts the individual candidates running in individual races. And I think the right candidate in the right race can make a difference no matter what their political party is.
Well, you're right, Marcus, but in the vast majority of those districts, there isn't a major party candidate in November because it is such an uphill battle. It's not a winnable race.
Yeah,
voters
don't
have
necessarily
no choices.
Think that is because of redistricting. Saying to me that
I think it's
because
a big
someone,
reason. It's not the
saying
only
to me
reason.
That because someone doesn't run in a race, because someone doesn't challenge an opponent, that often goes to the will of people or the organization of that party in that district that doesn't necessarily say to me, because I don't think that you can just pull these numbers out and say that it's a districting problem. Indiana has often seen competitive races where we didn't expect to see competitive races because of a candidate in that district that performed well and connected with the voters. And I think that the more we encourage candidates to connect to the voters and the less that we put more power into unelected, unaccountable people is better.
I'm going to throw it to Tom, and then I want to take us in another direction.
Sure. I just want to offer a couple other numbers to illustrate the point, John. There's 100 seats in our Indiana House representatives. Only 6 of those districts are considered competitive, meaning that the party does not enjoy more than 55% of the vote. So 6 of the 100 are competitive because of how rigged they are. What effect does that have when people want to think about running for office? In the Senate, 5 are considered competitive. And in our U.S. House delegation, 0. Okay? 2 are safe Democrat, 7 are safe Republican, and that's pretty much the way it always plays out. So when you're an engaged citizen thinking about running for office, and you look at the prospects of being able to survive something like that, it isn't unusual that you decide, no thanks.
Yeah, but I mean, a month ago, we were talking about the 2nd congressional district being competitive. We were talking about the 9th congressional district being competitive, and polling showed and fundraising
showed. And a guy from
showed.
Tennessee who basically bought his seat won because that district is almost impossible
or
for a Democrat to win.
Or he won because he had a better message that communicated to more voters in that district. I mean, but listen, what we're talking about here, though, is opinion, right? And so at the end of the day, should we have an unaccountable commission deciding things? What's the next step? Having a computer just crunch numbers and decide it for us?
No, because I mean,
well, wait a second, though. Let me step in there, because at some level, legislature still has to approve whatever plan that comes out from the committee, right?
With limited having the ability to make limited changes to it.
We believe they should have the ability to make limited changes. Actually, the draft recommendation requires an up or down vote. But the vast majority of Hoosiers support independent redistricting. They recognize the extreme conflict of interest that exists with allowing legislators to draw their own maps. So I believe Hoosiers are ready to trade in this old system for a brand new one.
We clearly got an awful lot to talk about here. So we are talking about redistricting and gerrymandering here on No Limits. My guests are Tom Sugar of Leader Leave, Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana, and Republican strategist Marcus Barlow. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about redistricting today on No Limits. My guests are Tom Sugar of Lead or Leave, Julia Vaughn of Common Cause, and Republican strategist Marcus Barlow. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named David has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. I have a question for the Republican strategist there. Who is espousing some information that just doesn't match up with the numbers that have been gathered, the data that's been gathered, and also the news reporting that's been done, which is, I mean, these people, news reporters don't just do stuff out of the blue nowhere except for Breitbart, that the Republican Party had a strategy of doing just what they've done, that's gerrymandered the district so that they could be in power and take over the states, control the states, and then return power from the government to the state, and then watch the things like abortion fall and a number of other things happen. How do you account for it in the conversation that you just had? You noted that, well, maybe he just had Tennessee, our friend from Tennessee, Trey Hollingsworth, that he just had a better, a better message when he had no message at all. All he did was talk about how bad his opponent was.
Okay, I'll tell you what, David, let me jump in.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I want to let Marcus respond to that. Yeah, Thanks very much for the call, David. I appreciate it.
There's a lot to unpack there. But, it seems as though the caller thinks that districting in and of itself is the reason why Republicans are in power in Indiana. And I would just say that, you know, when you come off an election where Republicans swept every statewide race and the presidential candidate also won by a large margin, that's a hard case to make that that's the reason why that happened. So, I mean, as to the rest of it, I mean, it was just a bunch of opinion.
To be fair, I think at least the argument I am hearing here is, no, Republicans should have a majority. It should be, though, somewhere in the range of 57% to 60% and not 70% to 80%. Is that correct?
And, you know, to go back to the earlier conversation, we're not talking about taking politics out of redistricting. I agree. That is kind of a ridiculous statement. What we're talking about is putting some balance back into the redistricting process, taking it outside the back rooms of the state legislature and putting it out in public view and allowing the public to control the process. So that's really what we're trying to do. Yeah. And there's accountability built into the system by requiring the legislature to approve the final maps.
But let's not diminish the change that makes it illegal to use political data when drawing the maps. Yeah, these are still politicians who are going to choose who sits on the commission. But the commission's rules are tight enough, they cannot manipulate these things beyond what the rules allow. And political data is taken out, gerrymandering isn't possible. That's all there is to it. And I do want to make one other point. You can't, when you just use population and you keep communities together and counties whole, the nature of this state still suggests, more often than not, John, there'll be Republican majorities in the House and in the Senate and in our congressional delegation. When you go to my website, leadorleave.org, you can actually experience what it's like to take the politics out and focus only on population. And you still see in the House, for example, 42 of the seats would be more likely than not Republican seats, okay? But there'd be 28 now that would be competitive. But because of the advantage they would enjoy, more likely than not, you would have Republican speakers. I'm okay with that. That's the way that reflects the nature of the state. So you maybe end up with a 50, 51, 52, 54% House, pretty much in alignment with wild voters. Now, and the reason this matters is because in Iowa, they've been using this approach since 1980. And if you look at the results of their elections, you find that almost in every case, the outcomes in their legislature looks almost exactly like their presidential vote. You know, so they have the most competitive elections in the country cycle after cycle because they've taken the politics out, the political data out, and based it on population. We can do the same thing here.
We're talking about redistricting here on No Limits. Melanie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm just curious, the commission and the whole process, does it include like tax-exempt lobbyists, especially like AFA and Advance America and those kind of organizations that kind of go around the end of separation of church and state by what they do?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Melanie. Tom, I'll start with you.
Lobbyists aren't allowed to serve on the commission. It's clear in the legislation that would not be allowed.
And there's a long list of other people who wouldn't be allowed, folks like political party chairs. The one thing that they did forget about are the family members of elected officials. So that's something we need to address in the legislative process.
And I'm just asking because I'm not actually specifically familiar with this, but are we talking about registered lobbyists or are we talking about people that
lobby? We're talking
lobby?
About registered lobbyists.
Okay,
people
so
registered under the Indiana Lobby
so then
Registration
to the,
Commission. Right.
To the caller's point, though, you could still have advocates.
Well, and we would expect that,
would be,
that people would the process that we envisioned and that we put before the study committee was much more like California's, where political activists seek to become members of the redistricting commission. They are the people who choose the commissioners are charged with creating political balance, gender balance, geographic balance, and advocates really vie for a seat. And so folks like Advance Indiana could put forth their best candidates, and then folks from the ACLU Indiana could have their best candidates as well. It's about balance in the process.
That moment, though, that I've got to step in and do my standard disclosure every time the ACLU is mentioned, that I spent 6 years as the executive director of the ACLU of Indiana. I don't want to hide that from anyone.
But Marcus, just to
we're
make
having
sure
the discussion.
Sure, John.
Yeah.
Just to make sure, Marcus, you remember in legislation, the caucus leaders, the Republican caucus, the Democratic caucus in both houses, appoint the nominating commission. So there is complete partisan balance and who ultimately so they have to come agree together on who's going to become a member of the commission, which will help as a screen into some of these things.
But they would appoint four members. But then five would be appointed by
they would actually appoint all of them.
Okay,
but then they would select some from this nominating commission, this nominating authority, which is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and then the three presidents of the largest public universities in the state.
I'm gonna throw this to Tom and Julia because obviously in part because of the work you've done on the committee, you know this better. Is there a certain there's a way in saying we're going to try to make this as equal as possible that also can deny reality. For example, at the national level, there's a certain amount of natural gerrymandering that goes on. And
right.
Some
People
of these
sort
small
themselves. Right?
Well, and in some of these small states, the less populated states that only have one member of Congress or whatever, their votes have a disproportionate effect anyway because of what we think of as at least a kind of constitutional gerrymandering and limits on the representation of the U.S. House of Representatives. Is there any parallel here in Indiana to that kind of effect? Some districts that are just by their nature going to be very overwhelmingly either Republican or Democratic.
Oh, sure. Look to Hamilton County in terms of it would be difficult to draw a politically balanced district. And frankly, there are, you know, counties in north central Indiana where I think it would be even more difficult than Hamilton, the Fulton and Cass counties. Likewise, in Lake County, north part of Lake County, it would be very difficult to draw a Republican-leaning district. So there's a certain amount of self-sorting that people do by where they choose to live. But then there are a number of other places where we could have competitive districts if the intent was to draw districts to be competitive. As Tom said on his website, he shows that it can be done without even the intent of drawing competitive districts, simply by sticking to criteria like keeping counties whole. Right. So what we need, the key thing, is an objective group of people doing it who are not self-interested in the outcome. They have to do it out in public and transparently, allow the public to have a meaningful way to participate. And then they have to have a set of common sense criteria in the law that they need to follow as they start drawing the lines.
Marcus, you have a thought? I could tell you're looking at me here.
Well, I mean, those are nice things to say, but we're already talking about how, you know, advocates of special interest groups would be heavily seeking to be on this commission. We've talked about how only four of the people on the commission would be actually decided by elected officials that are accountable to voters. Then the rest of them would be...
All nine would be.
Well, okay, they would be picked from a pool of people that would be decided by unelected people that aren't accountable to voters.
Well, we don't like the university presidents being involved because they're not even independent of the legislative leadership. But,
right, but to my point, though, is that, you know, we're talking about taking the politics out of politics, and I'm just saying that...
No, we're talking about equalizing the process.
And I'm saying that when we talk about equalizing the process, we can try to put as many rules as we want to put into whatever this commission would be, and it is still potentially going to be an advocate-filled, unaccountable body.
That would operate that out would, in public would, and transparently and the
legislature,
allow the public to
participate. So if we increased hearings in the legislature, if we allowed the public to comment on redistricting, then that would solve that problem.
It's allowed.
No, because a lot of times public hearings are just for show and the real business goes on behind closed doors.
The difference between these and the legislatures, these wouldn't be for show because we wouldn't have commission members that already knew what they wanted to do before they heard from the public.
I think that's
unrealistic.
Because this did start out as a bipartisan, nonpartisan effort, but... What I'm hearing, Marcus, from you is now a significant resistance to the idea. Does that suggest that Republicans in the legislature aren't going to be on board?
I'm not saying that. Yeah, okay. And I'm not. I know that I came in here and my title in the show is Republican Strategist. I'm not even talking about this from a political, or at least a partisan political point of view. I just have personally worries about the more and more power we give to unelected commissions. That's my personal viewpoint.
Tom, because you have had, obviously, legislative experience. You worked for Evan Bayh for years. And having known you for a while, I suspect you've begun to do a little bit of a head count on how many votes you will have in the legislature.
Well, sure.
How likely is it that this thing is going to move?
Okay, similar legislation has passed the House twice with bipartisan support. I actually think it will gain even more support this time. There were Democratic members who had previously voted against measures like that, who were a member of the study committee, and were won over by the approach. So I think we'll see a higher vote in the House. Before the election, both candidate John Gregg and candidate Eric Holcomb were asked about their position on the issue for the first time ever that I know of. A gubernatorial candidate is on the record. Both of them said they're in favor of taking the matter out of the legislature and giving it to unelected people, Marcus, and helping them, allowing them to choose how to draw the districts through a commission process. So we now have Our governor-elect in favor. We have, in all likelihood, the Republican-led House and a bipartisan vote, I do think. And then Democratic members of the Senate who served on our study committee also are strongly in favor of it. I think what we're getting to see, though, John, is that the Republican caucus of the Senate, Indiana Senate, is going to have to decide where it stands. In the past, legislation wasn't even being allowed to be considered in the Senate, even though it had overwhelmingly passed the House twice. So I do think Republican senators are going to have to think long and hard about whether they want to ignore one of the most important messages from the election. Their president-elect talked frequently about the notion of rigged elections. Mm-hmm. Well, if ever there was a rigged election, it is this one. Those that are created through gerrymandering processes like that. So they can ignore the voters who just put Donald Trump in the White House, who are expressing their concern about rigged elections, and take a pass on gerrymandering reform. I think that would be a huge mistake politically.
Yeah, but I think the rigged he was talking about is illegal votes. I mean, I think we can't say right now that the reason why people are being elected is because votes aren't being counted in their districts.
I agree.
Votes
with that.
Are
right.
being counted. We're talking about a different kind of rigging.
Mm-hmm. Is that voters don't matter.
Well, and obviously the fact that in some ways, even though all the votes were cast on November 8th, I'm assuming all of you are getting the same stuff on your newsfeed that I am about new speculation, new challenges in the presidential election. Does that intensify the concern about this? I've been covering politics for a long time. I've never seen as many people, not even in 2000, where at least right. in theory we had a similar situation where a candidate who got fewer popular votes became president. Nothing quite like this. The intensity of the reaction.
More than ever, people are starting to understand that the process really matters, whether it's the process of drawing districts or the process of how we cast our ballot, whether it's electronically or with a paper ballot. They're getting that what goes into the system absolutely impacts what the outcome of elections are. So now that's why I'm hopeful. You know, people are making the connection between issues that they care about and extreme legislation coming out of the General Assembly and gerrymandered districts. So I think the time is right for this to happen in Indiana, and we're excited that there are important people inside the State House who agree with us.
We are talking about redistricting here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what Chuck has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hello. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can. What's
okay.
on your mind?
Got a question. I see this gerrymandering. I'm a Democrat. I live in Morgan County. Before that, I lived in Hendricks County. My vote has never counted in this state, never, because this state is so gerrymandered. This gerrymandering is nothing more than just another form of voter suppression. And the Republican on the board ought to wake up and smell the coffee, because that's all this is, to keep Republican control out of it. And if you put the legislature, Democrat or Republican, in charge of this redistricting, that's a joke. You're just telling them, go ahead and do what you're doing now, because it's never going to change. I'll take my answer off here. Thanks very much
for the call, Chuck.
Hello.
So I'll tell you what. I am going to give Marcus a quick chance to respond to that, and then everyone will get a bite at it before we go to the break.
Yeah, I mean, my answer would be the same answer I had to the previous caller, is that, you know, depending on where you live, when I live in Marion County, you know, when I'm voting in elections as a Republican, do I really think if I'm voting in my U.S. House election that, you know, yet I don't feel like it is unfair to me because I live in a heavily Democratic area and I vote Republican. I don't see that as being unfair. I don't think that my district should reflect anything different than that.
Tom, I'm going to give you about 20, 25 seconds.
Well, actually, Marcus, I agree with you on that. I mean, there even when you look at the redraws that I've done, if you live in a predominantly Democratic area, a city that's probably Democratic, and you're a Republican, yes, I can predict the outcome more likely than not just by the nature of the people who live there. But when you look at the overall totality of the legislature and you see a legislature that is so out of whack with supermajorities that are clearly out of the mainstream of Hoosier thought, that's when you feel like you really have lost your influence.
We are talking about redistricting here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. My guests are Tom Sugar of Lead or Leave, Julia Vaughn of Common Cause, and Republican strategist Marcus Barlow. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about redistricting today on No Limits. My guests are Tom Sugar of Lead or Leave, Julia Vaughn of Common Cause, and Republican strategist Marcus Barlow. Getting an email question from a listener that actually anticipated the next area that I was going to go into. It's from a listener named Jack, and if you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jack writes, when legislative districts are drawn to favor one party or the other, doesn't that encourage more extreme politics when the primary becomes the more important election, not the general election, when greater numbers participate? Also, don't supermajorities make it harder for a given legislator to pay attention to the advocacy of their constituents? Don't the votes get made within caucuses, not committees? Tom's nodding his head. I'm going to let him have the first word. I'll let Marcus have the last word on that.
Well, it's absolutely true. The folks who generally participate in primaries are the most motivated voters in both parties. They tend to come mostly from ideological extremes of both the right and the left. And if you are in a district that is tailor-made for a Democrat, then you're going to be very, very sensitive about any attacks from the left. And you want to be able to, essentially pander to the opinions of an electorate that skews farther left than the ordinary mainstream. Same thing happens on the Republican side. So it does corrupt the process in that sense. One of the things I really like, and this is not part of the legislation, John, but I'm very intrigued with something that California did. They did a redistricting reform measure. They followed along with that with some other electoral reforms, including what's called a top two primary. So imagine a Republican district. It's a safe Republican district, but it's an open primary. Two Republicans run and a Democrat runs. The top two vote getters in the primary go on to the fall. That could be two Republicans in a Republican district. And what would be the outcome then? Two Republicans facing each other in a general election, and who are you worried about then? You're worried about independents. You're worried about Democrats. You're trying to connect with more ordinary members of the electorate, and that has a moderating influence and gives us a legislature that could look and sound more like us.
Marcus.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple of things I wanted to respond to on there. One is I think that we need to have a difference between correlation and causation. I don't necessarily think that having extreme, whatever it is you define as extreme, members of either party is anything new, having them elected. Having pieces of legislation that one person would call extreme, another person would say is totally reasonable. So, acting as though these things are absolute, I think is a little bit much. And two, I just went through an election season that we were constantly told that certain things were extreme, that it turns out that the voters' verdict on that, and I'm not talking about just on a district level, I'm talking about on a statewide level, was that it wasn't to the extreme that people said it was. And so I think that before we start to try to solve problems, we need to ask ourselves, are the unintended consequences of having an unelected commission that is not accountable, are they actually going to solve the problems that we're talking about? And do those problems actually exist greater than what those consequences could be?
I'm going to challenge that a little bit, Marcus, and throw the question to Julia, because as I say, I have been covering politics for a long time. And I will say in the past decade or so, and this is it doesn't apply to just one party, it's both parties, the number of times that I have heard elected officials who have advanced a position of some sort say, and are surprised by blowback on it, say, you know, I never heard from anyone who disagreed with me on this until, you know, this thing mushroomed. That was not something I would have heard back in the 80s or even the 90s. I hear it on a regular basis from both Republicans and Democrats now that opposition surprises them because it seems like they are only talking with the people who agree with them. Is there data to support what is admittedly my very anecdotal evidence?
Well, I don't know about the data, but I hear absolutely the same thing. And I mean, the best example that we have out of the Indiana General Assembly is the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. I mean, after that was passed, people just came out of the woodwork to say, who is this General Assembly and who do they think they're representing? They are not representing me, and they don't seem very representative of Hoosiers in general. We tend to be a moderate type of citizenry. We stick right to the middle of the road. And so RFRA caused a lot of people to get whiplash and say, where in the heck has our General Assembly gone? We expect people to be moderates and to pass moderate legislation.
I'll add one more anecdote to that, if you don't mind, John.
Sure.
Then
I'm going to give Marcus a chance.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah. When you talk to legislative leaders who are facing caucuses, supermajorities, and they feel, just because of their caucus dynamics, they're being pulled out of the mainstream and to the extremes. They're tired of it, too. That's why you see a lot of Republican leaders favoring redistricting reform.
That's why the Speaker of the House is driving this reform effort, frankly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Marcus, we brought up RFRA, and I think RFRA is a great example of what I think is actually happening over the years that you've been covering politics. And that's more that we are hearing from people more directly now, and our modes of communication are quicker and more noticeable now. And just to point to the RFRA example, we saw a huge firestorm, and we heard from people on the left that RFRA was an embarrassment to our state, that this was going to usher in all kinds of discrimination. And as you said, though, Hoosiers aren't that way. And so the people that passed the legislation didn't think that that's what RFRA was going to do. Religious Freedom Acts, similar ones in other states, haven't led to this kind of wild discrimination, because there was a coordinated effort on the left to attack Mike Pence for signing RFRA.
No, absolutely not. My parents are hardly on the left, and in the end, we found out
that RFRA didn't lead to that. So then what did we see? We saw a Democratic campaign that tried to tear down Republicans because of RFRA completely fail electorally.
Well, and that's what I was going to, in some ways, the RFRA example, I may be making Marcus's argument, although I think I'm trying to play devil's advocate on both sides here. The voters, you can't really gerrymander a state in this.
Exactly.
And the voters had a chance to speak in the governor's race about RFRA, and they clearly, you know, elected a Republican who, at the very least, refused to reject
who
it.
Who ran away from RFRA as hard as he could.
Yeah. He didn't run away from RFRA. He didn't run away from RFRA at all. He embraced both the records of Mike Pence and Mitch Daniels. When asked about it, he didn't run away from it at all. So I think the voters delivered their verdict.
We are talking about redistricting here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Lucien has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Lucien, did I pronounce your name correctly?
It's Lucien, but
Lucien,
that's all right.
My apologies.
No.
What's on your mind?
Well, it's a very simple answer to the whole thing. You take the first district as a state house. You write a program that takes however number of people are for a representative. Let the program take the first, let's say, 500,000 from that area, then go to the second district, which should be on the north by Lake County, and the computer will take automatically 500,000 in that area and just keep working around. Nobody's involved. Nobody can gerrymander, and it's all simple.
Thanks very much for the call and the suggestion. Julia, you're shaking your head. Marcus is shaking his head now.
Yeah, that's what I figured because...
let him respond. Thanks much for the call.
We've got to make this complicated.
Too simple of an answer.
Well, the problem is that our communities of interest are going to be violated. You know, who's to say when you get to 500,000, you're not going to draw the line straight down Main Street in Gary and, you know, divide the community of interest. So I wish it was that simple, but I think that human beings have to be involved in this and they have to be given a set of criteria to follow. The key question is, how do we find a group of people who are independent of the legislature, and what are the criteria that we give them?
Well, and realistically, though, don't we have to count on the legislators to surrender this power to make this happen?
Well, that's
we're asking them to yield something to make it work.
Give
right?
up one of their most potent political tools, absolutely. And in the vast majority of states that have reformed redistricting, they haven't had to go through the legislature to do it. They've been able to do it through a ballot initiative. There is something, though, that's hanging over all of this that may really motivate the legislature to go the redistricting commission route, and that is that a federal court in Wisconsin a couple of weeks ago ruled partisan gerrymandering unconstitutional. And in fact, the standard that was used in Wisconsin has been measured here in Indiana and has found our districts to be almost as gerrymandered as the Wisconsin ones that were thrown out. So that similar litigation could be filed here in Indiana. And this is going to go to the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court upholds this decision, it's a whole new day in terms of redistricting reform. So I think it would really be responsible of the General Assembly to say, hey, we need to get out ahead of this. We recognize that whichever party is in control in 2021 will be tempted to gerrymander. That's just the nature of the beast. So let's put a redistricting commission in place to make sure that we don't get into a partisan gerrymander situation.
And that ruling, though, has still not gone to the appellate level, right?
No, that was the appellate.
That was the appellate level.
It will go straight to the Supreme Court.
It will go up to the
Supreme Court. It was a 2-1 decision,
yeah. Yep.
Okay, and who were the plaintiffs?
Whitford, who was a Democrat in Wisconsin. The lead attorneys are out of the Campaign Legal Center, and this is a test of the efficiency gap, which is basically a mathematical formula that can show when partisan gerrymandering crosses the line into unconstitutional territory.
Well, and this question probably reflects the fact that I've spent way too much of my life around lawyers. But the reason I asked who the plaintiff was is then if the state of Wisconsin, you know, takes it to
right.
the Supreme Court, they become the plaintiff. If it's, and I'm trying to think, if we still have a 4-4 Supreme Court and there's a 4-4 tie, how does
Kennedy,
that play out?
Kennedy has expressed an interest in the issue before, but failed to be able to find a reasonable test to measure.
Right. He basically asked for this tool. And so we're saying, here's your tool to measure partisan gerrymandering. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who is carrying, I mean, I'm assuming that the committee's report has to go before the legislature, as we've talked about.
Right.
Who's carrying the legislation on it? Julia.
Representative Torr will be the lead sponsor in the House, and I am confident we'll be able to pass a strong bill out of the House. The Senate is definitely going to be our challenge. So I encourage folks to communicate with both your state legislators, but absolutely talk to your state senator about this issue.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Bob. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Bob writes, districts should be based on geographic quadrants of a defined size, perhaps based on UTM coordinates or state plane coordinates, the only best fair way. I think what he's saying is you just pick an area, but that would have population discrepancies, right?
Getting back to Lucian's point earlier, a population-based approach makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm suggesting, and that's what legislation actually in its current form calls for. But as Julia points out, you've got to make sure you keep communities intact and counties intact and those sorts of things. So it doesn't have to be too much more complicated than that. He's on the right track. It can be much simpler than it is. But you have to have – well, the Constitution requires that the districts be similar in size by population.
We are talking about redistricting here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what Bill has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I just have a comment to make about the opinions that have been expressed previously, pro and con, about getting a more balanced candidacy for either party, that things would tend to move towards the middle rather than people on the extreme voting in the primaries, et cetera. And I just offer one piece of evidence that on a statewide basis, if we look at the state as the macrocosm of the various districts, when Richard Murdoch ran against Senator Gregg, he lost. And he lost in a state that is, quote, highly Republican, unquote. You know, various people can make comments about why he did, but my opinion is he lost because of the positions he were taking that were rejected by the voters. I would just add that to your discussion, and thanks again for taking the call.
Thanks very much, and I think, actually, as Marcus pointed out, you were referencing Senator Donnelly rather than Senator Gregg.
Senator Donnelly, also a Notre Dame grad, go Irish.
Well, that's the entire state, of course, John.
Yeah.
So there is no gerrymandering across an entire state.
To the question of extreme candidates, we talked earlier about primaries and how only the most motivated voters come out in primaries. And I would say that much more than districts being drawn has just the general movement of the parties. And I wouldn't say that this is just an Indiana thing. I'd say that this is a nationwide thing where parties themselves have been working to reduce their more moderate members. And I don't think that that's a result of redistricting. And I would say that this goes to my larger point about this, is that I think that we should do more work to diagnose what problems we're talking about here and what we think can actually fix those problems.
Realistically, what are the chances that, presuming the show is still on the air, that we're not going to be back here 10 years from now still talking about this as a challenge? Because this is the window. If it doesn't happen in the next – it goes beyond 2021, we are really looking at another decade, right?
I think we have a really good chance. Again, you know, the person really driving the reform effort inside the state house is the Speaker of the House, Brian Bosma. Whatever his motivations are, he's doing the right thing. But that's significant because most of the times people inside the legislature pushing this are backbenchers, people with not much influence. So the fact that it's the most powerful guy inside the state house doing it is really significant. Again, we've got a really good place to start with the study committee's draft. We've got to make it better. It would also allow ex parte communications. It would allow secret conversations between commission members and those impacted. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. But the key to this is the citizens. They need to get involved. They have to make this a top tier issue. We can't ignore it any longer.
And I think that probably will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guest, Tom Sugar of Lead or Leave, Julia Vaughn of Common Cause, and Republican strategist Marcus Barlow. It's been a pleasure, and I guarantee when we bring you folks in, we always get a lively conversation, so I'm grateful to you for that.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thank you. Also like to thank our listeners for some great questions and observations. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.